Today on the Goggler Podcast, we are going to be talking about the Batman, Matt Reeves' long-awaited, what do we call this? Reboot, refresh, reimagining.
Let's just call it the movie.
The movie kind of does a little reset. It does put everything back to zero, in a sense. It is a spiritual successor to the tone of Christopher Nolan, I would think.
Okay, I see that. Yeah, okay.
But, and I didn't think this was possible, it actually grounds the character even more in reality.
Mm.
With the Christopher Nolan movies, you still had elements of the supernatural, if you will, or the science fiction.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it supernatural. I'll say science fiction. Well, I guess Ra's al Ghul was a little supernatural.
That's what I was saying. Ra's al Ghul had a bit of a supernatural element to him, right? And then you had the science fiction thing at the end of Batman Begins with the machine that vaporized water and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And even at the end of The Dark Knight, he was using technology to like track people's movements. This one feels a little more stripped down. It feels a lot more raw. It is very crime noir. It feels like what we would get if David Fincher ever made a Batman movie.
Yeah. I think you said that on the drive home and I can't stop thinking about it. That feels like the perfect description of what this film is. The other description is this is the Detective Comics Batman film to Christopher Nolan's Batman Comics Batman movie.
And if you're unaware of that distinction, then there are many versions of Batman, right? And I think they can all exist. There's Batman 66 with Adam West. There's Michael Keaton's Batman. There's the comic Batman, the cartoon Batman.
Even the comics Batman, there's two or three versions.
I think there's more than that. I think every time a new writer takes on Batman, there are certain core elements that stay the same. Parents dead, vow for vengeance, orphan, Alfred.
Has got a bat family.
Villains roster, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So those core elements remain, but then the character kind of changes. The philosophy of Batman, what drives him, that kind of stuff changes depending on the writer who takes on the task. So I think there are many versions of Batman. And I think this version, or Matt Reeves' version, might be, and I'm not saying this as hyperbole, but it might be the most comic book version that I have seen.
I think what you're trying to say is that Matt Reeves' Batman, the Batman film, is not concerned about trying to be cinematic. The way the story unfurls, it's very much like an issue-to-issue comic. It isn't so slavish to the three-act structure, I think, because there are some decisions that Matt Reeves has made for the Batman, which I think is just absolutely inspired. The way he treats the main villain of this, there is one main villain, but there isn't a showdown in a way, almost. You know what I mean? The showdown isn't a big battle in Act 3. It's a confrontation at the end of Act 2 or beginning of Act 3 that sort of drives the story on to that final bit. Right now, this film is so fucking satisfying. I can't even get my brain right.
I left the cinema feeling more satisfied than I have in a very long time with a DC property, right?
That's an easy statement to make.
And I think you're absolutely right saying that this feels like an issue-to-issue comic book. There is such a fantastic narrative structure to this in which the mystery at the core of the film unfolds. And I won't tell you what that mystery is. We're not going to spoil anything major. We'll do a full-on dissection podcast at some point. But this one, I think we just wanted to get our quick reactions out as to how we felt about the movie. And I think there's a very interesting narrative structure to this film in that, one, it is the perfect example of show, don't tell. There is so little exposition with regards to who the character is or what he stands for. You know, you start in year two of Batman, essentially. Matt Reeves kind of drives home the point that, hey, you know this character already. You know what he's about. Let's just get on with the goddamn story. And it's something we've been whinging about for ages. We don't need to see that damn murder again. We don't need to see him as a child. We know his trauma. We want to see what happens next. And I think what this movie does, possibly even better than the Nolan films, it is the journey of how Batman develops the philosophy of who he is. And so by the end of this film, what you get is you get the idea of what drives this Batman and where he stands. and how he starts off as a tool for vengeance and how he kind of evolves from that point and where he gets to. I think that's something I haven't seen a film do. In the Keaton movies, both in Batman and Batman Returns, Batman is kind of fully formed by the time you meet him at the beginning of the film.
I think this does more for the character of the Batman than Nolan's Batman Begins did. Because, yeah, we see him travel and learn how to throw people and fight Ra's al Ghul, who's not really Ra's al Ghul. Oh, wait, it's actually the white guy who's Ra's al Ghul. And that's fine, but yeah, he's not fully formed in this. And even in the Nolan ones, even when he's beginning to be the Batman, it almost feels like he's already fully formed. When he comes back to Gotham, it seems like, I know what I must do now. I know what I stand for. I know who I am now. I've got no doubts. I'm not going to kill. I've got all these fancy weapons that I've somehow designed while I was away in the middle of nowhere. Whereas here, there is a doubt in him that he's almost still willing to give it up. He's just waiting to be convinced that the GCPD can pull all this off and that he'll just hang up his skull and he'll move on.
No, but I think that's why Pattinson does such a great job in this film. I think it's important to note that this is the first Batman movie. There are many firsts in this Batman movie. This is the first Batman movie that really leans into the crime trope of the character. There is a reason it was called Detective Comics, right? And there is a reason Yes. We refer to the character as the world's greatest detective. In all of the other films, there are detective elements, but this one truly feels and truly plays out like a piece of crime fiction. I've never seen that on the big screen in this way with the Batman before, so that's great.
I've never seen it on screen with the Batman before.
There were little bits in Nolan, but it always felt so cursory.
No, but that's right. It feels cursory, like when he carves out a little brick so he can recreate a guy's fingerprints.
Right.
That's more science fiction than it is detectiving. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas here, he is visiting crime scenes. He is making note of where things are falling. He's seeing things other people are not seeing.
The other first, of course, being that we have a movie in which we see very little Bruce Wayne. There is a lot of Batman in this film.
Yes.
And because that is the point of this story. And also, I think Robert Pattinson does a tremendous job in segregating. I mean, in our previous podcast, when we were doing our Batman retrospective, we talked about how difficult it was to separate the Bruce Wayne from the Batman character. And I think Robert Pattinson does a lot to do that in the physicality, in the demeanor. I think it is a real phenomenal performance. When he's Batman, he has this incredible confidence and swagger about him. When he is Bruce Wayne, there is an uncertainty. He is slouched over. Even his conversations with Alfred, he feels like a lost child when he's Bruce Wayne. And it's true, he's not fully formed. He hasn't grown up. He's still living with this trauma. But when he puts on the mask, he becomes something else. And I think that is absolutely key in Pattinson's performance. In fact, the way Matt Reeves has crafted out all of these characters, whether it's Paul Dano's The Riddler or Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman or even Jeffrey Wright's Inspector Gordon, it feels true to the characters I used to read in the comics, in various versions of the comics, right?
Yeah, they feel familiar. That's kind of my thing when I said that this movie isn't concerned about making Batman cinematic, because I still appreciate Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, but it doesn't quite feel like Christopher Nolan has read that many Batman comic books. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know for a fact Tim Burton's Batman just feels like it's a reinterpretation of the slightly kooky Adam West and maybe even the kooky Batman comics of the late 80s, early 90s. But Matt Reeves' Batman and all the characters inside it feel familiar if you've read a lot of the comics. And I'm not saying you have to. And if you haven't read the comics as much as we have, you will still think this is a great time in the cinema.
But that's because it's a beautifully written and really well-made movie. Irrespective of the fact there is a guy in a giant bat suit running around, this is a movie that is incredibly well shot, that just leans into the fact that film is a visual medium.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all there on the screen. Like, I love the fact that so much of this movie is implied. In one sense, rooted in your understanding of the character or your familiarity with the character, but also in the performances of the actors. There is a great scene at the end of the film. I won't say what it is, but there's a great scene. It's a moment of revelation between Riddler and the Batman. And the fact that everything is in Pattinson's eyes, nothing is said, it's beautiful. And you're just, you know what he's thinking, you know what's happening, nothing has to be spelled out for you. It's just there. It works.
And it's a film that let me rephrase that. This is a film that respects its audience and expects the audience to respect the film. If you're paying attention to Pattinson's eyes, especially in that moment, you are going for a fucking ride. It wasn't a long sequence, right? It's just a confrontation where the Riddler is taunting the Batman. Robert Pattinson's performance is just stellar. Dude, he's a full mask, right? You see just his eyes. He's not saying a thing. He's clenching his jaws at points.
You go into it thinking and believing one thing, or Robert Pattinson's Batman goes into it thinking and believing one thing. The way that shift happens and when that shift happens, oh, beautiful.
I dare anybody to honestly tell me that they weren't in the same spot.
That's why I love this movie as much as I do, because it's been a long time since I've seen a film, and a superhero movie in particular, in which, despite knowing the beats of a superhero film, I still felt a tremendous amount of tension.
Oh yeah, this movie is tense throughout.
The way the mystery plays out, the way this crime drama plays out, had me at the edge of my seat. I had no idea how it was going to end.
Yeah.
I had no idea what the bad guy's play was. And I think that was fantastic. For me, the opening sequence to this film.
Oh my God.
Robert Pattinson does a voiceover. And I think, if you could think of one perfect moment in every film that you watch, the opening sequence of this movie is a perfect moment because it sets up the character beautifully. If you look at previous Batman versions, there are cool moments when Keaton shows up for the first time. Sure, I love that moment. Tell all your friends about me. I'm Batman. It's beautiful, right? When Bale shows up, same thing. When he first wears the costume, great. But this narrative voiceover in setting up the fear of what the Batman is perfect. It is pitch perfect.
Yeah. It takes Tim Burton's 1989 Batman a little further, right? Because that film also starts with criminals being afraid of the specter of Batman hanging over Gotham City. But in here, in Matt Reeves's one, I think those opening sequences where it's just shots of the undesirables of Gotham City going about their business, vandalizing or
Robbing convenience stores,
running amok. But then there's this specter of a shadow of what's in the dark. And I think that whole bit was about 5 minutes into the film. And I was like, I'm sold. I'm going to buy the DVD and the Blu-ray and possibly on digital as well. At that point, I knew this is a different Batman movie. This is a detective movie. It's not just an action wham-bam with car chases, right? I think you said it earlier. This is definitely David Fincher's Batman. The Riddler is like the Zodiac Killer. The movie plays out like Seven. It's a great fucking film, man. I'm glad I've got tickets to watch it again on Friday because I can't wait to watch it again.
And it's proof that you can do things with these characters. And I think that's the one thing I'm glad that Warner Brothers is doing with these characters, that you can have Michael Keaton in The Flash as Batman, and you can have Affleck show up again in a Snyder movie or a Snyderverse movie. Great, you can do all of that. But you can have these characters play out the same way they played out in the comics. In the hands of different writers, they are different things. There are different interpretations, and fans and audiences will gravitate towards the interpretation that they love the most. I mean, if you look right now, I've lost track. There are probably 20 or 30 Batman titles that come out every month. Every month, there are that many different Batman comics written by different people about different things.
And to be fair, that we're not even talking about the characters in the Batman universe who have got their own comics. We're talking about
the Bat family has their own series of comics. No, this is just Batman comics.
The actual
Batman.
There's
a Black Batman. Yeah. There's a future Batman. There's a Batman set in 1966.
Batman Incorporated. There's Batman Worldwide. The DC Black Labeled Batmans.
There's the Batman and Superman stuff. There's just Justice League stuff. There's just too much Batman, right?
Too many.
And Batman is ubiquitous. And I think that is the precise reason you can do a story like this, because the character lends itself to this movie I know you said Fincher movie, crime drama, Zodiac killer, you drop all of those things, but I think that's the wonder of comic books, right? I think so much we talk about superhero movies and comic book movies as if they're a genre unto themselves, but they aren't.
Yeah.
They contain genres, they contain a myriad of storytelling possibilities. And I think what Matt Reeves has done with this one is actually cash in on that and try to tell a new story based in the Batman universe. I'm not saying the story hasn't been told in the comics. It has. I mean, he lifts generously from The Long Halloween and Dark Victory, which are some of my favorite comic books. But he does enough to make it a metaphor for today and channel what's happening in the world today and make it relatable to today. And I think he puts his own mark onto that story as well. He doesn't just take the bits he likes most and cobble it together to make a movie. Zack Snyder, we're looking at you.
There was something else that we were talking about with regards to the Batman, about how Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson's character is effortlessly cool. There isn't a pause and you miss it cool moment the way Zack Snyder tried to do with that lightning Frank Miller recreation thing.
Yes.
Here, Matt Reeves has built his own language of cinema, right? With regards to his Batman. You've seen it in the trailer, the bit where he's, it's an overhead shot as the Batman is holding a red flare in waist deep water with sort of people coming up behind him. That shot is beautiful. There are so many shots where they are almost unintentionally beautiful, but you know they're intentional.
There are so many iconic shots in this film, and I think the cinematography is absolutely stunning. That scene with the flare in particular, and just the metaphor of Batman, and there's a theme of rats that runs through, and him being the Pied Piper and all this stuff. I mean, we can go into all of that, but you know, we'll save that for our analysis later. But there are all of these moments, and they hit hard because they provide a visual climax to everything that is happening.
Yeah.
And I think that's what works well about this movie. Like, all of these scenes and set pieces have a great visual climax to them. It's not just a narrative climax. It's not what you're expecting. Even when the Riddler is confronted towards the end, when he realizes that all of his hopes and dreams are falling apart. Paul Dano is just incredible, by the way. Just chef's kiss.
Can we talk about Paul Dano?
His face is covered for 75-80% of the film. And
oh my God,
the performance is still magic. He is scary.
And to be fair, frightening. We never actually see Paul Dano. We see him in shadows. We see him sort of out of focus when he does attacks, but we mostly see him through social media videos that he puts out. But he is terrifying.
Yeah.
This for me was brilliant bit of design on behalf of whoever designed this. But to have Paul Dano have his glasses on the outside
of the mask,
something about that just feels sinister.
Yeah.
Something about that just feels sinister. You know? His glasses, I'm just, oh my God, his glasses are on the outside. I don't know. Also, Colin Farrell's in this film. You're going to spend 3 hours watching this movie and go, where's Colin Farrell? He is unrecognizable. We've seen the trailers, we've seen the photos. Until you spend 3 hours in a movie with Colin Farrell and don't see Colin Farrell, you have no idea what you're talking about.
And the prosthetics aren't overwhelming, right? The prosthetics, there is a performance there. It's not...
Yeah.
It's not just the prosthetics doing all the work. It's amazing prosthetics because the face just feels real. But there is a real performance there and it feels like the Penguin. I mean, it's got all of those characteristics, especially... I mean, he isn't the Penguin we're used to in Adam West. He isn't the cackling guy with the umbrella.
He's not Danny DeVito's Penguin.
No, he's the mob boss, right? And this whole mob arc in the movie as well, which is lifted from the Long Halloween storyline by Jeff Loeb, that actually grounds the movie in something real. It is a great vehicle to talk about the journey of Bruce Wayne and how it impacts his decisions as Batman and what kind of Batman he wants to be. Because if Batman's goal is to fight crime in Gotham, then this is the ultimate crime, right? What yeah. takes place in this movie is the ultimate crime. And so all of that comes to a head in a really, really smart and clever way. Zoe Kravitz is amazing as Catwoman, I feel. It's a very different kind of Catwoman. For me, the Catwoman we see here is also different from the Catwoman that we get in The Long Halloween. The Catwoman here feels a lot more like the Catwoman we got from the Tom King run on Batman, which took place yes. over the last few years. And there is this bat and cat dynamic that plays out between them. The chemistry between the both of them is fantastic. It is super sexy and hot. I'm afraid to yeah. take my wife to go and see this movie because she might leave me for Zoe Kravitz. It's entirely possible.
I think that's okay.
But
I
will forgive her because it's Zoe Kravitz. I'm like, please, by all means.
To lose out to Zoe Kravitz is understandable.
I understand. No, it's fine. It's yes, okay. exactly. Yeah. No, all of the performances here are great. Andy Serkis makes a great Alfred.
There's a new dynamic there as well between Pattinson's Bruce Wayne and Serkis's version of Alfred Pennyworth. It's a really, really great. I don't know. It's just really great.
I was going to say there is a weight to each individual character here, and I think for me that's the most impressive thing, or the greatest feat that Matt Reeves has done, in that he has given all of these characters, including John Turturro's Carmine Falcone, he's given all of them weight and motivation and agency. And so while it is still very much Robert Pattinson's movie, it is very much a Batman movie. Nothing detracts from that. At the yeah. same time, none of these characters feel like side characters. Everyone has an important part to play in this plot. I don't know where DC is going to go from here. I know there are two spin-offs planned. There's the Gotham spin-off, which I think is based around the GCPD with Jeffrey Wright. There might also be a Penguin spin-off. They kind of announced that, but I don't know whether that's going to happen. Both of those are going to be in HBO Max. But I can tell you that this is a noir world that I want to see more of.
Yes, completely. Absolutely. I think I really hope people go watch this movie several times, because I want to see more of Matt Reeves' Batman. I want to see Matt Reeves' Batman universe.
Agreed.
Aside from just the spin-offs, because that probably won't have as many Batman as I'd like, if any, to be fair. But I want to see what Matt Reeves would do with a different villain from the Batman roster of villains. I want to see Matt Reeves' take on Dick Grayson storyline with Bruce Wayne. You know what I mean? I want to see Matt Reeves' version of Talia al Ghul. You know what I mean? That relationship Bruce Wayne has with Talia al Ghul and the Batman's relationship with Talia al Ghul. I think that would be fucking amazing. I want to see more of Matt Reeves' Batman.
By the way, just before we wrap, Greig, I don't know how you pronounce his first name, G-R-E-I-G, Fraser. That is the name of the cinematographer. Don't forget it, because the cinematography in this film is absolutely stunning. The shots, the cameras, the lenses he decides to use.
Yeah, I mean, he did work on Dune, he's Rogue One, Zero Dark Thirty, you know, so.
The tension is created through the visuals. All of those scenes with the Riddler, whenever the Riddler attacks, that's a fantastic scene. You see a little bit of it in the trailer. It's an attack on a church during a funeral service. The way that entire scene is framed from the moment you hear this sound to the actual attack is absolutely stunning. And there is so much tension here, and it is all done visually, and I think Greig Fraser is the person to thank for that. It is stunning. It is amazing. Yeah, I cannot get enough of this movie. I'm going to watch it a few more times in the cinema. We can tell you for certain that none of this 3 hours feels long or slow or boring. It is an incredibly well-paced movie.
I mean, if you're not looking for a Transformers film, you'll enjoy this.
Oh, yeah, but if you're an idiot, then you've got no time watching this movie, lah. That's different. I mean, yeah. You know.
I mean, look, this movie, there's a lot of story here. I'm invested. I'm playing along.
The Riddler is not just running around going, hoo-hoo-hoo, I'm the Riddler. Here's a puzzle for you.
He's not in a green suit with a cane, you know. This is something else.
We will be doing a full spoilery dissection with our buddy Nick Dorian that we'll drop next week after you've been given a chance to watch The Batman when it opens on Thursday. I believe there are sneak previews tomorrow. So check out The Batman. Let us know what you think. We know people have very strong opinions about Batman.
Also, there aren't really any massive spoilers here. I mean, this isn't a Spider-Man situation. I wouldn't say stay off the internet because, again, there isn't massive spoilers here, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is there any
massive spoilers? No, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah. There aren't any major narrative or plot spoilers. There aren't any major character spoilers. We know who the villain is already. Spoilers.
Yeah.
Actually, and this is a movie in which, I guess, it's all about the journey, right? You're sitting there, you're watching this story play out, and you are enjoying that process because this is what cinema should be. Watch the Batman. Let us know what you think. You know how to reach out. You've got all of our social media feeds. That's GogglerMY. You can also drop us an email on podcast@goggler.my or a WhatsApp message on the Goggler hotline. That's 012-524-5208. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Goggler Podcast.